Welcome, warrior. You are listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group Book Review Podcast. Your host, Juvon Tai Dung Yi Soon Sin, Jorn Vestai Vampyr, and Jajim Tai Jajim will explore Klingon culture as it appears in Star Trek literature. Perhaps you yourself can hear the cry of your inner warrior. If so, go to www.kag.org and make your presence known. Learn how to join the Klingon Assault Group and begin your journey along the way of the warrior. Now, here are your hosts, Kapla. Greetings and welcome to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Book Review Podcast. And we are all here today. I am Jajim.
Jorn.
And I am Juvon.
Are you sure about that?
No.
I think we need to get Imperial Intelligence in here and question this imposter.
I don't know. Why would we think he's an imposter? His voice sounds pretty good to me.
Thank you.
He wasn't sure.
Oh.
And where is there a Klingon in the universe who is not sure of himself?
Well, I'm sure he is who he is, because his little icon has a picture of his pet Targ online, so it's got to be him.
It's got to be me, Jorn.
Okay, we'll accept it for now.
Okay, so at any rate, we are going to be looking at The Klingon Empire by Dayton Ward from 2017. John, you want to give us a little intro to this?
This is a different type of book, in that it is not a narrative story like we've talked about in all the past Bound by Honor episodes that we've dealt with. This, in fact, is a travel log, a travel guide, if you will, telling us what you would look for, what you would want to do if you were touring the Klingon Empire. This book is not, while this book covers a lot of what's going on Kronos, it does not limit itself to Kronos, in that major spots of the Empire that you have heard about in various Star Trek episodes are also represented here with their dining and entertainment availabilities.
This book was kind of awesome. Just putting it out there.
It was. It was a lot of fun to read. You know, we had a travel guide that covers everything on Kronos, which is described as a planet that is mostly water with one single supercontinent, and that continent is divided up into numerous places, and then there are side trips that a person can take while they're looking at the planet to different historical sites, and it's just a really neat, realistic feeling to this book.
It's not like other books where a normal novel, you kind of got to read it beginning to end to really appreciate it. Where this one, it's designed to be like a travel guide, that if you want to read about Kronos, you start there. If you want to read about Borath, you can skip to that chapter. You can read all the food stuff individually. Everything's broken up. It's just like a ton of flash fiction put together in one novel. It's very well done. It could have been a mess, but... And this isn't even the first time Dayton Ward's done it. He's done two of them. And if anybody would like to hear about him making the book, they can check out episode 8, where we interview him.
Yeah, that was episode 9, part 1. Our last episode, yeah, a couple of weeks ago, we talked to Dayton Ward about this and many other things, too. I would highly recommend that everybody listen to that interview, because it was a lot of fun to do.
And you talk about your ability to use this book as a reference book, because it is very well organized and not a mess. If you're looking for a particular topic at a particular destination, they're all in the same order as you go through the book, so they can be very rapidly found. The only thing I think that might be missing from the book would be an index at the back.
Yeah, very true. However, one thing that is in the back of the book that is really helpful, especially to us who are trying to develop activities for conventions, there is a bibliography back there with a great deal of information on where to find more to develop a panel.
Which is always a good thing to have references cited in any work like this, because it's useful.
Makes you appreciate too how much work he put into it when you see how, when you see the bibliography and you see how much he had the reference. Even talking to him, he had the scour episodes and books, and there are certain books they actually reference in the book itself, which is interesting as well.
Now, the way the book itself is organized is so logical and so well put together that, you know, this could be a viable travel guide to the Klingon homeworld.
The summary of the plot from the back of the book is Nuna, bored of the standard vacations to places like Risa or Wrigley's Pleasure Planet, want to discover a unique and ancient culture not bound by standard niceties and social mores? Then Kronos and the vast Klingon Empire are for you. This one-of-a-kind travel guide will give you all the information you need to plan, enjoy, and survive your trip to the very heart of Klingon territory. From an overview of Klingon history to tips on what to wear, fur and leather are very popular, to a glossary of important phrases like Mamai, Dane Ha, and a couple more I can't pronounce myself, which apparently means, would you like to dance with me? Every major location in the Klingon Empire is covered in depth, with tips on where to eat. You've not lived until you've eaten Klingon skull stew. How best to get to and from your chosen destination, and what to do if you find yourself challenged to a Batleth battle to the death. Locations include homeworld Kronos, its famous locales such as First City, the Caves of Nomat, and the Hamar Mountains, and the city of Cronella, plus neighboring moons Corvex and Praxis, and many more must-see areas. The book also features exclusive maps and illustrations that bring to life the Klingon Empire and form the perfect reference guide to any visitor. So what are you waiting for? Kapla.
It does make it very attractive to visit the Klingon homeworld. So our overall impressions. Hey, Juwan, why don't you take us through this?
My overall impression is that this is a very well-written book. If anybody likes the Vulcan version of Hidden Traveler's Guide, Universe Traveler's Guide, you'll enjoy this one as well. And as somebody who's read both of them, I'd say if you enjoy this one, you should check out the Vulcan one too. They're written by the same person. They're both very well done. The illustration is great. And you wouldn't think characterization would be a big deal in a book like this, but I found even when he had like excerpts, like personal written letters or articles from different characters from the series, he hits all the major ones. It seems like even the characterization is done very well. So, this would be a great book, not only for to organize a panel around, but even if, for people who like to get into the persona of their Klingon, I imagine this would be a good book because then you can choose where your character's from and build a story around that section of the book.
Did you notice that almost every one of those letters from the characters was all from a previous edition of this travel guide?
Yes, I did notice that. That was really cool that it was an excerpt from the whatever edition. I thought that was really cool that that wasn't like people who, I doubt anybody who'd be reading the book would not know that these characters are from different centuries. So it's interesting that this book has been around for that long, and it makes me, I wonder if he pulled them from Klingon versions. Like it just adds a layer of detail to it that's really interesting.
I think the term you're looking for is verisimilitude.
I just really enjoyed this book, and I've read it twice now, and the first time I read it, it is like, wow, could we ever bolster our Klingon culture panel based on this book? Because it is full of information, and I'll get more specific later on some of the things that I found in there, but it was just really a lot of fun to read. We'll move into our, well, I guess you could call them characters.
If we're moving into the characters, some of the ones that he's talking about on the letters are Worf, B'Elanna, Marktek, Ezhabar, and General Kord, which you can, you know, some of them are from Next Gen, Voyager, Deep Space Nine. Two of them are from the original series, Star Trek movies.
Yeah, 5 and 6, there were characters, weren't there?
Yeah, Ezzet Boer is
Star Trek 6.
Star Trek 6.
And Kord is Star Trek 5.
Yes, the unfortunate General Kord. You know, and the characters, they, of course, this is not a storybook. This is a travel guide. But each of the characters, you know, Kalis, Worf, B'Elanna, Martok, Ezzet Boer, and General Kord contribute to this, and you can hear the change in voice in each one of these sections, and it's very believable and neat the way those are incorporated in.
And how each of those incorporations are expressing their particular love of the particular section of the book they're talking about.
Yeah, match it up very well.
I liked how some sections, it's almost like he had a main character to it, because that area of the world is defined by one major event. So a lot of the stories revolve around it. And it's cool that you kind of get the full story, or what they believe was the story, as you move along from each section, a little bit more is revealed.
One character that I forgot to mention here is Gorkon. And in particular, Chancellor Gorkon, his write-up talks about the Central Plains.
According to the travel guide, there is no shortage of activities that one can participate in. You know, these are, of course, explained as things that were before closed to outsiders. But as time has gone on, and as Klingon travel has spread through the galaxy, they have found that the tourist trade helps them a great deal. So there are a number of activities that one can participate in, including the Great Tribble Hunt.
They also talk about the Martek Festival.
Yes, which is a festival that honors the founding of the modern Klingon civilization. And speaking of modern, going back to the time of Kalis.
Well, a main part of that festival is the battle between Kalis and Molar, I believe.
Yes, it is. That takes place in the big square. We saw that in a Next Generation episode while Worf was attempting to get Alexander to get excited about becoming a warrior.
There's rites of ascension that you can view. Batleth competition.
And what would be my favorite, of course, Klingon opera.
Oh, does Ward go on and on about Klingon opera?
Which, you know, I would really appreciate seeing some of these titles fleshed out, especially, for instance, the Battle of Santara, which is a reenactment of Captain Clagg's adventures as chronicled by Keith DeCanedo in his series of novels.
In the IKS Gorkon series.
And then we can always participate in the Bahat Kul Challenge, which is roughly Klingon arm wrestling. And that sounds kind of brutal.
Well, they do that down here, Klingon feast. So, nah, it can be, or maybe not.
Well, that would be for us old guys. But, you know, someone like Juvan, who isn't really old, I bet you that would be exciting for him.
It's cool that each part of the world had their own special thing.
Did you notice how fast this pretend Klingon changed the subject from a test of honor? I think we need to call Imperial Intelligence.
You know what, Juvan? I don't think you're going to get away from scrutiny here.
That's all right. Won't be the first time.
Okay.
And he accepts the dishonor.
Oh, he's not dishonorable. Come on now.
Prove it.
He is. He's with us on this podcast. All right. So anyway, the Day of Honor. Javon, do you know anything about this Day of Honor?
You know, at this point, it's been like 2 months since I read the book.
Again, changing the subject.
Okay. Well, in that case, Jordan, you tell us about the Day of Honor.
The Day of Honor is a day for introspection, to look into your heart, to see what honorable deeds you have done in the last year and announce them to the world. Besides, you also get some good Rotec blood pie.
Oh, nice.
So, Javon, do you perform this Day of Honor?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Every day?
No, mostly when I'm out with work friends.
It's once a year.
Well, it may only be once a year, but I'll tell you, as busy as I am, I have to reflect, because if I don't, I start forgetting stuff.
That comes with age, old friend, age.
Yes, sir, it does. You know, I found that personally this book could have a number of uses as Klingons.
This discussion of we've just gone through leads us right up to what can we do with this book?
Now, if I remember correctly from the interview, Jim, you said you'd already used it before for panels.
No, I had not used it for panels, but I'll tell you what, as I read this thing and got into it, I found numerous ideas to bolster the panel that we did on the ship that I used to be on, the Raptor's Heart, and either bolster that one or develop an entire new one. And some of the things that I found were really, really neat. For instance, pulling up my notes here, the section on etiquette and the importance on how to approach and talk to Klingons and what to do and what not to do to keep yourself safe. You know, for instance, you don't walk up to a Klingon as you do with a human and offer a hand shake. You could lose your hand over that. You know, how to say hello and goodbye. Klingons appreciate someone that will try to use the language. Even if they don't do it well, they do appreciate the attempt. You know, the section Brief History right at the beginning of the book is just absolutely loaded with information that leads up to the modern culture of Klingons and even afterwards. I mean, you could do an entire panel just on Klingon history. One thing that I really appreciated was the last time I served on a Klingon culture panel, a question from the audience came up about our trefoil symbol and what it represents. And I'll tell you what, it's in here. The teak gob is explained. And the next time I get into a panel, if someone asks that, there's no way I'm not going to know the correct answer. I kind of made it up, winged it on that one. Lots of rituals and traditions are fleshed out in this book. So, I mean, it is a rich guide. And then as I say, there is the bibliography at the back of the book that will guide you to other sources. If you're looking to start panels, this would be a really good place to begin to develop ideas for things to do.
Speaking of panels, if you do a little bit more digging, you'll find that somebody has written up the tale of the three lieutenants of Kalis, for whom the trifoil is based on. And it's their three Dotargs that go and make it up.
Be interesting to see if books are inspired by this book itself, that if like it they take an idea that he developed through the travel guide and flesh it out into an entire novel.
One thing I don't remember if I saw it in this book or elsewhere was Klingon shopping. That if you go into a Klingon shop and you spend a lot of time looking at merchandise and not picking out what you need, you're likely to get into a fight with the shop owner.
I feel like it was this book because I do remember that.
Oh, yeah. There's a great deal of information on the shopping and different things you can get here and there. And you don't want to upset a shop owner. You definitely want to get in, get what you want, and get out quickly.
Because that shows your determination and your focus on accomplishing your task. They also talk in here about bedding and what you should look for in a inn when you want to spend the night.
Yeah, that was kind of funny how they actually, because of human need for comfort, that this was covered in every single chapter, what you can expect in bedding.
In other words, take a pad and a sleeping bag along.
Or there are inns that are catering to humans. And you see that as a kind of a reference to what Worf went through in DS9 when he took up residence in the Reliant.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you what, if I were going to Kronos to tour, I would definitely take my own amenities, because I feel like asking an innkeeper for a pad and blankets and things to soften the surface of a Klingon bed would cause them to look down on me. So if I didn't say anything and I just took care of it myself, I probably would get more respect.
And be able to walk out in the morning.
Well, that's questionable too.
We talked about Klingon opera early on. What are the possibilities that a large group, large ship within CAG or some other group could develop the Battle of Kelmak, Kalis and Lukuta, Koloth Castle, or like you said, the Battle of Santara?
You know what? With all the Star Trek material out there and games like Star Trek Klingon, where it's very interactive and they had a lot of additional stuff, I'm kind of surprised at this point that CBS or Paramount before that, or whoever owned them before that, hadn't pursued making Klingon operas, because it was just a recurring thing with Worf on Deep Space Nine for the longest time. It's kind of weird that it was never pursued in a tie-in material.
They talked about and they complained about Worf playing Klingon opera all hours of the night at huge volumes, but you never heard any.
No, there was one episode where you heard a chunk of it. Yeah, it was the episode where they're trying to get Sisko a baseball card.
Yeah, there were snippets here and there, but when you think about what it takes to put on an opera, especially an epic opera like this, you have to have a very skilled composer to do this. You would need to build a theater for that opera, such as Wagner did to perform his Ring in Bayreuth, Germany.
Well, I wasn't thinking of like the actual stage play of it. I mean, just like a recording of it.
And come on, somebody has got to have thought of doing the Klingon, have thought about doing Don Giovanni in the original Klingon.
I have no doubt that people have had that idea, but as I say, to produce an opera, you have to have a very skilled composer to do it. And the staging is very, very difficult. Operas are huge productions. They are not easy to put on. And I would think that it would take a very long time, because everything has to be made up. It does not exist. We have a skeleton, a bare skeleton of the different stories, just the snippets that we got from the episodes. And the story has to be fleshed out. So you have to have not only a composer, but you have to have a librettist and a translator to take the English, change it into Klingon. Then you have to have enough singers that are skilled enough to sing it in Klingon. I'll tell you what, you're talking about a huge undertaking to produce an opera.
I think the biggest hurdle to get over would be to get enough people together who could actually proficiently speak Klingon that can sing it. Because I imagine getting the story, you know, the Klingon pop warriors are already out there making music. So it's not like it's already impossible, but I think just getting enough people or getting somebody who had a range of voice that they could be several people at once would be the biggest hurdle to get over, because it's just not really out there.
And we've got at least two cities that are currently doing the Klingon Christmas Carol in Klingon.
Oh, is that all in Klingon? It's not just like a Klingon version?
There is a section of it that is in Vulcan. Oh. Because the narrator is a Vulcan.
But everybody's actually speaking Klingon?
Everybody is speaking like Klingon. And stage either has is usually a super title above it telling people what lines have been spoken.
Oh, I just assumed it was like a Klingon Christmas, that children's book where they just took the, not Christmas Carol, but what's the other one? The Night Before Christmas or whatever. And they just made a Klingon version of it.
No. They took the Christmas Carol and they changed it from Scrooge not respecting Christmas to Scroogeka not having gone through his rite of ascension. And the warriors of past, present, and future showing him the error of his ways.
That sounds cool. Too bad there's nobody who does it in the area.
Now, as you know, it's a large undertaking. And for those of us that have adult jobs, adulting jobs.
As the band leader.
Oh, I teach K-12 music, my friend. I see about 200 students a day.
Oh, yeah, I guess high school band would be annoying.
Yeah, well, it takes a lot of time to do this, and if you have family and you're trying to balance your life, it's going to be a tough time putting something like this together. You know, go ahead, John.
Well, I don't know how far they've gotten with it, but there was a company that was working on taking the Klingon version of Hamlet, turning it into a stage production and touring with it.
Actually, I think that was done.
I'd seen some of the videos. I didn't know how far they'd gotten with the project to this point.
Now, is that like a Christmas Carol where we've gone completely off topic, but is that like the Klingon Christmas Carol where it's all in Klingon? Or is it just a Klingonized version of the Hamlet in English?
It's Hamlet in the original Klingon. There's also, I think it's Much Ado About Nothing in the original Klingon.
Oh, okay. We've talked about reviewing these books, but I had no idea that they're just in Klingon, so I wouldn't understand it anyways.
No. The books are not just in Klingon.
Oh, they're in English.
One page is Klingon. The next half of the other side of the page, you know, when you open it up, is in English. So you can see the translation as you go.
Fair enough. It's bilingual. It's probably like stuff.
Yes, it is.
Is anything at work is usually like left side's English and the right side's French, or unless the French happen right, then it'll be the other way around.
This is left side is Klingon, right side is English.
Oh, cool.
But keeping along that same line, can somebody, would a group be interested in trying to do a stage production of The Story of the Promise? Just a retelling of The Story of the Promise.
I don't know.
Well,
I think we've gotten way off topic.
Well, there's lots of possibilities.
Actually, it's in the book.
Yeah. And so we bring that back by saying that Klingons appreciate both opera and Klingon, especially when it's in the Shakespeare, especially when it's in the original Klingon.
So if you guys were to take this book, and you had to choose a specific panel to base on, or just something you run at a con, just narrowing it down to one subject, what would you do?
The book. Okay, it'd be an 8-hour panel, but...
Yeah.
Well, the book itself would be something that would be difficult, but one could summarize it down. However, I'm going to focus on to start with a culture panel, and then others may grow out of it. One thing I found really, really interesting about the book, and what Dayton pointed out, was how many different museums a person can visit and see a lot of things and learn a lot about the culture itself by looking at the history.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. Like, at one point in the history, they like to just destroy their past and not acknowledge it. And then at a certain point, it kind of turned around on itself, and it became like that. If we don't learn from this, we're gonna be doomed to repeat it again.
And I thought it would be an interesting idea for a group that's going to have a fan display, a fan table at a convention, to try and theme that table as a Klingon museum.
Oh, that's a fun idea, especially if you got the room.
That would be a fun idea. You know, this book also, I think I'm going to order a copy of it. I have it on Kindle, but I think I'm going to just order a copy of it, a paper and ink copy of it, and put it on my fan table at the next convention I attend.
It'd be interesting to see, because I didn't get the Kindle version. I had a hard copy that I got last year. It'd be interesting to see what you think of the difference between the Kindle version and the hard copy.
I think when we talked to Dayton, that he mentioned that the Kindle version had been updated with a lot of information. I don't think anybody's going to stand there and read the entire book, but when I get it, maybe I'll compare those and see what I come up with.
You talked about what would you actually use at a convention out of the book? Well, we actually on the Raptor's Heart years ago pulled the Great Tribble Hunt and did it as a panel for children, in that we hid tribbles throughout a playroom that they could use. The object was to find as many tribbles as they could and use them like you would use a ball in dodgeball, so that at the end of the hour when the event was up, the child with the least number of tribbles was the winner.
Oh, right.
The last time we did that at Ozfest, I helped out with that, and it was a lot of fun. The kids really started getting into it and having a blast tossing those tribbles back and forth.
So you don't have to do it exactly the way it's described, but you can come off and do stuff like that. Lord Vampire in in Denver does a similar idea, except his is hungry Klingons or something of that nature. Basically, it's a pile of tribbles with Klingons on
those
roller things that have to go and try and capture as many of them with their cardboard batlets as they can, as they're pushed in and out towards the pile of tribbles, the way the game Hungry Hungry Hippos is played.
Yeah, I think we talked about it in detail on one of our regular keg podcast ones. I think I saw a video of that too. It looks like a lot of fun.
He's got a video of it with kids doing it and with adults doing it. So it's fun for both.
That would be a lot of fun. Dayton gives a number of things that to do and not to do while you're there to keep yourself from becoming injured or perhaps even killed. One of the things he talks about is how to correctly greet someone. As I said earlier, you don't walk up with a handshake. If you address a Klingon, he is going to turn to you and say, "Nukne," which means, "What do you want?" You don't say hello or hi or how you doing or anything like that. They just want to know what you're after. And of course, when you say goodbye, you always wish someone success with kapla. That's kind of neat. What are some of the other things that we found in the book that were interesting?
Well, you've already mentioned the bidding issue. He talks a lot about how to avoid getting yourself sucked into a challenge of some sort that's going to kind of either hurt you or dismember you, or you're not coming back from this one. He also talked about Borath. You're not going to find a lot of food there, just the bare basic staples. So you probably ought to bring your own food, because the nice delicacies that the monks have are in short enough supply that they're not going to share.
I really enjoyed Borath stuff. It might be because I read The Light of Kalis recently before that, where I think issue 2 covers Borath and the trials people have to go through to try to see Kalis. So So it was interesting reading his take on it, and even as some, even not having any indication of what's going to be going on Discovery, it still seems to closely line up with what he wrote.
It's neat that you get that there is a place in the Empire where it's going to be pretty well bare-boned, and that is Boroth. You go to Boroth, and it isn't really set up for tourism. You can go there and see some of the sites and see some of the relics and things like that, but they are not going to cater to you there. You're pretty much on your own.
But at least he lets you know that's what you need to expect.
Yeah, and as Juvan says, it makes it an even more interesting place to go because you're going to be discovering things on your own without somebody telling you about it.
I believe there were places here that Ward recommended you not go to, weren't there?
I didn't recall. The one thing that I do recommend he did not, or the one thing that I do remember he did not recommend, was when you went to the place where the military arm of Klingons are trained, to avoid the, avoid the Klingon version of SOS.
One has to wonder how Klingons cook that particular item, since most of their food is served raw.
Yeah, that would be, it would be a very interesting, very interesting dish. Of course, you know, they're all through the book, there are these little nods to those, the different things that if you are in the know enough, you're going to pick up on stuff. Now, for instance, that one that I just mentioned, Dayton is a Marine. I'm going to, you know, I don't say former Marine because once a Marine, always a Marine. And, you know, that's kind of a wink and a nod to his
Jim,
past.
We called it that in Boy Scouts.
Oh, I know. But, you know that he's connected this now with the military, and it's kind of a wink and a nod to his being a part of the Marine Corps.
That's an interesting way to look at it, that he was able to bring that background into it and flesh out the story even more.
Yeah, there's winks and nods all over the place, and it's fun. It's fun to find those and point them out.
Any good writer is going to bring themselves into a book, so, yeah.
Well, Dayton is more than good. He is awesome. I love reading his books, and this is an example of a book that I could only think was a lot of work, getting all the research, putting things together in an order that was logical and flowed well. It really speaks to his skills as a writer.
Oh, you know what's, this is random, but wasn't there a Quark's bar there? Like Quark had franchised himself or something weird?
Yes, he had.
This was the book. That was hilarious. The idea of Quark franchising himself up on Kronos.
Well, we've had a Quark's franchise here on Earth.
Yes, and unfortunately, it's gone.
Now, yes. Is that the place that was in Vegas you're referring to?
It was part of the Star Trek experience in Vegas, yeah. I want to also, we missed something on activities that I had brought up, which was, can a group get together and write an episode of Battlecruiser Vengeance, either as a short story or as a performance, a stage play, or even as just a reading, yeah. Whether the reading is reading it straight through like an author does, or doing it as a first reading of a script with different people acting out different characters.
Yeah, if somebody is interested in that, I want to do it like a radio play. I imagine me or Jordan could help you record that.
I would be happy to voice one of the characters.
So if any of you listening are interested in getting into CAG podcasting, maybe this could be your opportunity.
Actually, me and Adrian were talking about doing some short stories. So maybe I should throw it out to him once he's done law school.
But I just wanted to drop that in there too.
Excellent. So favorite points of plot, if you can call anything here a plot. Of course, the overall overarching plot to this is to make Kronos an attractive place to go for a vacation.
Yeah, I think the main plot was just kind of the overarching idea of that Kronos is reforming and they're trying to become more inclusive rather than exclusively Klingon.
And you know, I do have the Quark franchise. I think one of the things we didn't talk about is all the different points that Ward goes into that are parts of the series, like the memorials on Narendra for the USS Enterprise C in its mission to save Klingons from the Romulans attack.
And didn't they have, like, in the Hall of Honor, wasn't Captain Picard the only non-Klingon in it?
There's a statue of him in the Hall of Warriors, but that's different than the memorials for the Enterprise C, which are not on Kronos itself, but on this other planet.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. And wasn't that what Murtok's entry was kind of about, was the learning to honor not only your fellow warriors, but your enemies as well. And that's why they started a museum for the Dominion as well.
But as you can see, then there are lots of these little things that are getting thrown into Klingon society through the use of this book.
Yeah, I guess we really didn't cover the side trips that he points out. As you go from one place to another, you can go to other things. For instance, he talks about Camp Khitimer, where the peace accords were hammered out.
He also talks about the statue of Kirk on Rural Pente.
Yeah, which is no longer actually a prison, but, maybe it is. If I recall, if you get on the wrong shuttle, you might wind up in some trouble.
Yeah, I think it was still a prison, since they do tours through it, and you can't vary off of their path.
Which tells you something about the dilithium deposits on that particular moon, since they've been mined from Archer's day forward.
Yeah, at least 3 or 4 centuries, it sounds like.
So, if we haven't already covered it, let's move into our closing thoughts on this book. John, why don't you go ahead and take the lead on this?
As I said before, this is an unusual Star Trek book, but it is a very good reference book. If you're looking to learn about Klingons and Klingon histories, it pulls together an incredible amount of information. If, on the other hand, you're looking to spice up, beef up, improve your Klingon fandom experience at different events and activities, again, this is a very good book, because you can take a piece of it and design an entire activity around it. For instance, the Great Tribble Hunt, the festivals, the rites of ascension, all kinds of different things that are mentioned in this book. You can find what you need to reference. And as Jim pointed out earlier, there's a list of them, references to them in the back, that you can go and find out more information on and design an event to really pull your audience into this Klingon fandom that we share with each other.
I couldn't say it better. There's nothing I can add to that, because it's just exactly what I was thinking. How about you, Javon?
Really can't think of much more beyond that.
Imperial Intelligence, would you please come and investigate this imposter?
I'd be interested for people to email us and tell us what they would do with this book, or what they've already done with this book, or maybe even comment on the post itself so people can see their ideas. Because this book should be utilized more for Klingon, not just panel building, but even persona building would be a good way to utilize it. That if you know where your character is about it, but you want to flesh it out a bit, you can read book and figure out where they're from, and you can flesh out their background from that. And it might be only for you, but it's just an added layer to your character that wasn't there before. But if people have used this book or want to use this book or have had ideas of how to use it for type of stuff, you should at the very least send us an email at podcast@keg.org, or comment on one of the links that we've left and tell us how you would use it.
And aren't you developing a podcast for people to talk about the exploits they do in character?
Yeah, I finished the first episode. I'm just waiting for it to go up. So it might be up already. But if you have tales that you would like to tell, if all you want to do is just read a report about your, read your after event report that you want other people to know about, or if you guys do something that not a lot of other groups do and you just want to talk about for 5 to 10 minutes and let people know about, or you just want to boast about something that you've done, we'd like anything. Basically, as long as it isn't obscene, we'll pretty much take anything, because it'd just be fun to hear what other people do in the group.
Now you're sounding more like a Klingon, trying to find ways for others to bring forth the songs they have to tell to other Klingons.
If the episode 2 hasn't been up already, I'm testing for the second one about doing a theme for the episodes to see if people would like that. This podcast, I want Tavern to be kind of whatever people want to be. So we're going to test the theme, and we're going with origin. So your origin to Keg is what I'm looking for. Just how did you join it? And you can be as ridiculous as you want or as straightforward as you want. And I've got submissions going both directions.
Or as glorious as you can make it.
Yes.
Over the top, people. Glorious.
Okay. Well, speaking of getting off the path here, but that is a very worthwhile project that Juvon has taken on, and I'll have to remember to get my origin story recorded and get that to you very quickly. Rating the book.
And we're all about self-promotion in these podcasts.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're Klingons. That's what we do.
End of November, ideally, for submissions. But, you know, if you send it in late, it'll just be another episode. So don't even worry about the date.
Excellent. So I'm going to rate this book. I'm going to give it 5 butt cool challenges.
Out of
5.
And I'm going to give it 5 Batlat tourney victories.
I'll give it 5 out of 5 targs.
So you're going hunting this afternoon, eh?
Oh, yeah. Dax is here waiting.
I'm just going to stay in out of the snow. So, Juvon, tell them how to get a hold of us, where we are going, how to get a hold of us, and...
We are going crazy.
Obviously.
You can email us at podcast@keg.org. You can find us on Google Play and iTunes if you just type in K Podcast if you want our episodes. You can go to the website for the backlog, because I know at least on iTunes they only keep the 10 most recent episodes. And if you want to contact us on Twitter or Facebook, just look up Keg Podcast and you'll find us. Pretty straightforward.
So, for Bound by Honor, I am Judge Jim.
I am Jordan.
And I'm Juvon.
And join us next time on Bound by Honor. Kapla!
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 You have been listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group Book Review Podcast. Bound by Honor is brought to you by the Klingon Assault Group and is produced by Admiral Kirk Zantai Loon Keej. If you hear the call of the warrior, visit our homepage at www.kag.org to learn more about what it means to be Klingon. Perhaps you have what it takes to be one of us. Listener feedback is always welcome at podcast@kag.org. Kaplop!